Well, hello, Gordon. You're a familiar face in these studios.
Well, you can't see my face now, but I suppose, yes, I am.
And a familiar voice.
But I have been back, and it's great to be back, at least for this, for WMUK.
So how is retirement treating you? I see that you're spending at least part of it writing plays.
I am, and that was a goal when I retired. I said I wanted to write. And, you know, I have been able to do that more seriously now that I am retired. I came out of a great playwrights conference at Kenyon Playwrights Conference in Kenyon, Ohio, in Gambier, and got a lot of prompts and ideas and saw a lot of other work. And that inspired me in a number of ways to create this new play. Which is Homemakers in Heaven, the first act of which is Homemakers 1967.
Is that your first love, your real love? Is that fair to say? Without throwing WMUK to the wind here, but...
No, I would never throw WMUK to the wind. Yes, I think writing right now is what I wanted to do after I retired. And fortunately, I'm doing it, and I come back to do some reviews here, but the real writing that I'm interested in is playwriting. I have a background in theater. I was a director. I taught theater. You know, I've designed, I've acted. But it's always been playwriting that I really wanted to do if I had the time, and now I do, and I am.
I'm always curious when our writers and artists choose their niche, their thing that really captures them. Why did playwriting grab you instead of, say, writing a short story?
Well, I wrote my dissertation on the Royal Court Theater. I went to LSU, and we had a connection with the Royal Court in London. And the Royal Court is really a playwright's theater. That's where John Osborne came out of and Look Back in Anger. So they wanted to write plays by real people, not people who were saying Tennis Anyone or lived in palaces, you know, the average Joe on the street. Mm-hmm. And they've been doing that, and they're still doing it. In fact, I submitted this play to the Royal Court. We'll see what they say.
Oh, nice.
But Homemakers in Heaven went over there. So that study, I got to talk to a lot of playwrights who had their first show at the Royal Court and had it reviewed. And this was mainly, you know, since 1956 through about 1975. And that study convinced me that this is what I wanted to do as well. I was kind of secretly hoping I could do that someday. And now, with the time, I've created, I'm going to say three plays in the past 8 or 9 years, but one since I've retired.
Well, let's focus a little more on Homemakers in Heaven, this particular one-act play. I understand that it's coming up at the Epic Center. Tell us about that.
It is. It's part of the Theater Kalamazoo New Play Festival, and it will be presented Friday, February the 9th at 8 p.m. in the Epic Center, and also at 4 p.m. on Saturday, February the 10th. Now, it will be presented along with a number of other plays, and of course it's free, so
there
are a lot of playwrights that are involved here from Kalamazoo. And there are a lot of writers in Kalamazoo, as you well know.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Yeah, have yet to hit the bottom of that well.
No.
I don't think I ever will. So let's talk about the play. What is it about?
Well, it's, you know, the title gives you a clue. It's really about what the question I think I'm addressing here is, what is that place, or where is that place that we place those women who raised us, or perhaps if we're married, who raised our children? I'm speaking about those who are deceased. Now, at this point, my mother died a few years ago. It's not necessarily about my mother, but it's about that shelf in your mind. Where in heaven? I mean,
yeah.
Do you picture, you know, your mother with wings and clouds up there in heaven? Or is she a presence in your life that you're able to engage and talk to just about every day? And so that's kind of what drove me. It's really a series of 13 monologues, the full play. Now, we're going to see the first four at the Epic Center, you know, on the 9th and 10th. But
yeah,
it's really different takes on people's relationship with their deceased mom or the deceased caregiver. It could be a grandmother. Yeah. But whoever raised you.
It's interesting the way you've done it, because these people pick up a phone.
Yeah.
And they start talking to that deceased person.
They do.
And they really start to open up. And in fact, so much so that as I was reading the play, I felt like, you know, there is something, you know, like maybe therapists use that idea.
Yeah.
That your imagination brings them there, and you almost think that person really is there.
Yeah.
They really are talking to
them. Well, you know, one of the ideas that spurred this in talking to deceased relatives is after Fukushima in Japan, there was a phone booth erected by a farmer in his backyard.
Oh,
looks like a real phone booth, kind of an Asian-type cornice on it, Japanese style.
Right.
And that is for people who would like to talk to their deceased relatives who perished
in
the Fukushima disaster, not from the nuclear, but from, I think there were 3,000 souls who perished in the tidal wave after the earthquake in and around Fukushima. And this farmer erected it in his backyard. People lined up. The calls are free. Is it connected to anything? I don't know.
Yeah,
you know, they seem to think so. And in the Shinto religion, you know, ancestor connection and worship is, and reverence and respect is part of that. Now, I'm focusing on Americans, but, you know, the last scene takes place, you know, kind of out on what I consider the edge of the world, over the Sea of Japan.
Yeah.
You know, and you won't see this necessarily in what's going to be presented this week in the first four scenes, but that's where it's going.
There's something about that tangible phone in your hand, I think. I mean, you can talk to someone's spirit wherever you are, you know, in any moment. But I think there's something very powerful about having a tangible phone in your hands.
Yeah.
So that was just fascinating. So this concept of homemaker, we don't hear that anymore.
No, we don't hear that word. And, you know, I mean, home ec classes, you don't hear those so much. It's more child development and family economics and that kind of thing, maybe, but you don't hear the term homemaker so much. But you know, the work continues. The work goes on.
It has
to be done by someone. And so I'm focusing on 67. That's kind of when I came of age and, you know, went from high school to college. And there were a lot of political things going on, certainly the war in Vietnam, but also I think awareness of women and their roles within the home and the workplace and the push-pull of those and the push-pull within the family. So that's the word and the terminology that we used back then. You're right, you don't hear it very much anymore.
And yet when you stop and think about it, it's kind of a beautiful word, making a home.
It is.
And maybe we've lost something. And a homemaker, you know, I'm a feminist. You can be male or female or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
But there's something about making a home. It's more than just cooking a meal.
Well, and one of the characters says it's more about than housework, you know.
Yeah,
it's making
a
place of peace for the family.
Right. And a safe place to fall.
A safe place, an oasis.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's part of what this play is about. And the changing concepts and the changing connections over time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this play for me does several things. I really was, in my writing, felt like I was tired to cup and saucer realism, tied to that and kind of tired of writing about it. There's some cups and saucers in this play. And I'm also here experimenting with some non-chronological storytelling.
Yeah.
And finally, I'm letting the audience connect the dots a lot more. Those are things that I tried to do in this script. You may or may not see it in the first four scenes, but I think it does come through in the full 13-scene, two-act Homemakers in Heaven. So, you know, that's one of the reasons, the challenges that I set out when I started writing this.
So when this one came to you, the idea for it, sometimes, you know, writer, playwright, doesn't matter. It all comes in one beautiful piece, just smoothly, and other times you struggle and you rewrite and rewrite. Was this something that you had heard in your head and seen in your mind's eye already, or?
Maybe the part about the Shinto phone booth in post-Fukushima.
Which is
phone
a wonderful
booth.
Image.
Yeah, it is. And then that's only part of the play. Actually, it came out of three or four prompts that I received when I was at the Playwrights Conference. One day, one of the people who was teaching it. I think it was a person from, might have been Jill Rafson from Roundabout Theater, great playwrights theater in New York, said, okay, I'm going to give you a prompt for tomorrow, because we'd go to class in the morning. You'd write in the afternoon, and then student actors could perform if you wanted them to or read what you wrote at night. So it was great, you know, just writing all day. And here's your prompt. You have a market basket. You have three items in it. Just write them down. Don't think. Just write them down. All right. Now write a 10-minute scene based on that. And it would be prompts that were kind of like that. And that's really where the first scene came from. And, you know, I've always felt like my strengths as a writer were character and dialogue. My weakness was plot.
Okay.
So I just wrote three or four monologues, not knowing where it was going, but then connecting my own dots, I kind of saw a direction coming out of that.
Okay.
And then I went with that and used those first four scenes as the basis, picked tangential characters in each of those. So it's really what it is four different families in 1967 dealing with, okay, what are the tasks, what are the roles of women in the home? Also overlaid with the political structure that's going on with Vietnam.
Yeah.
All of that.
You mentioned a little bit about how you've written previously, the realism, chronological, that kind of a thing.
Yeah.
Tell us a little more about your history in theater writing and what you've had on stage before, maybe.
Yeah. Actually, Facing Heaven is the other script. I'm always writing about heaven, aren't I guess. Yeah. Facing Heaven, Homemakers in Heaven. But, I mean, is there any other real burning issue?
Heaven. Yeah.
And I'm not saying it exists or not, but I'm more of a student of human values around that and what people do and say when they access deceased people in their lives. How do you talk? How do you do that? So the monologue is a real, you know, a great tool for me.
Yeah.
Because I see life as a lot of monologues. And I look for situations where they are. So I don't know if I quite answered your question there.
Well, I was just looking at, you know, the kind of plays that you've written in the past.
Yeah. Well, Facing Heaven is, a 9-character show, cup and saucer realism, chronological storytelling. You know, I think you read it in an earlier iteration. It's come a long ways.
Yeah.
And those kinds of plays are, you know, one set may take place indoors, out of doors, with a family unit and kind of a family journey rather than one person's journey. This play is one person's journey, except you don't really realize it until you get to the end. And then you see what the journey was.
Well, don't give it away.
I'm not. No.
So let's talk about some of the differences between being a writer and being a playwright. When most of the time I'm talking to writers who have agents and they either submit to a traditional publishing house or they self-publish or small presses, it's different for a playwright. You need to, get your work read?
You do.
Produced?
You do.
Talk about that part of it.
Well, it's a difficult process. Not that I want any sympathy, but I think everybody who's a playwright knows the key is it's not publication. It's getting your work on stage. I want to see this work on stage. I want to see it more than anything, and Facing Heaven as well. And some of my other work as well. I've had 2 productions and 3 productions, really, if you count All Ears Theater. I did a script, Critic and Wife, a few years ago for All Ears. So I've had 3 productions, and I've had about 4 or 5 different readings. Facing Heaven went through 3 readings, a couple here in town. One was public back at the old, Actor and Playwrights Initiative, which was going to produce that, and then they folded about a month or two before they were going to produce it. So getting your work produced. Now, I've gotten a little better at networking, a little better at finding opportunities to submit my work. Yeah, a lot of the theaters, the big theaters say, unless you have an agent, I mean, don't bother. And how do you get an agent? Well, you get your work produced. So it's this kind of, you know, vicious circle that goes on. So it's a little tough, and they're kind of limited opportunities in Kalamazoo. We've got a great theater scene.
Yes, we do.
However, one of the things that's lacking is new work. There are a couple of opportunities. The Civic, bless their hearts, have started doing the Carver series, and they did Debbie and Arnie's play, I think, Radiation, last fall. I saw that. It was a great production. And they're doing another one this, I think, No Way Out, this spring. But really, you know, I understand the economics are not, you know, you're not going to get, you know, it's not going to be like producing Annie
you're
or
right.
something
you
like that.
You start looking at what all the theater houses are showing.
Yeah.
It's all the classics. And I've had a chance to talk to some of the people running those places. They say, yeah, we want the new work, but at the same time, we might get an empty house.
Yeah.
And if you have a classic, you know you're going to sell your seats out. So, yeah, you've got a challenge.
And so it really is a challenge just to get your work read. I mean, a theater, a regional theater, great regional theater near us, Steppenwolf, mm-hmm. in Chicago, where I just saw Tracy Letts play The Minutes. Lord, what a play. I talked to Tracy Letts' agent because he was one of Ed Sorbel. He was at the Kenyon Playwrights Conference. And he's going, we were getting 2,000 scripts a year. Mm. No one could read. You know, I had desks piled high with these scripts. So we had to go to literary agents. So if you're a playwright, sometimes you'll get, okay, we'll take literary agents, but send us 15 pages. And then if we want to see more, we'll let you know.
Right.
Okay, well, that's something. The other thing is you look for contests. Now, in a contest, you will at least get your work read.
True.
There may be a lot of competition, 200, 300, 400, 500 other people. The nice thing about Homemakers in Heaven is I can break it down. I've got a 10-minute scene, which will be the fourth scene that we'll see on Friday and Saturday, or I've got a one act, or I've got a full length. And so there are various contests that may want one or more of those iterations of what the script is. So that's one of the things that I learned. And I talked with, I think, Donna Hoke out of Buffalo, who's with the Dramatist Guild. And she, you know, here's some advice on getting your work seen. Get a 10-minute play. I know you've got the big, long play, Gordon, but get 10-minute or a one act somewhere and get your name out there. Meet a literary agent. And so that's what I'm trying to do now.
That's hard. We wish you luck. Or is it break a leg in theater?
It is break a leg. More for the actor going on stage, but I'll take break a leg. Thank you. Yeah, I would. I'm hoping for some results in that area, but if not, the writing is very invigorating and very fun.
Well, thank you so much for coming back in, Gordon. It's great to talk with you again.
Thank you, Zinda. Glad to be here.